Many of us who are investors in Tesla recognize that the company is far from just a car company. Instead, we see Tesla as being a technology powerhouse with an amazing speed of innovation. In this video, we will first explore all the markets Tesla will dominate and how they will do it. We will then discuss the current state of AI and all the ways Tesla's taken advantage of artificial intelligence, neural networks, and machine learning in their products and services. We see Tesla eventually winning massive markets, not just in electric vehicles, but also robotaxi, energy, robotics, and the holy grail, general AI. What is not as well known is that it is actually their expertise in artificial intelligence that underlies their competitive advantages. Tesla is using AI everywhere. Of course, their electric vehicles, but also battery management, manufacturing, insurance, robotaxi, TeslaBot, energy, Dojo, their supercomputer, and many others. And we can't forget, we should also explore Elon Musk's new project he announced recently called Truth AI that will be part of Twitter and will compete with GPT-4. To help us explore these topics, we're joined today by Dave Lee. Many of you might recognize Dave as he is one of the top experts in Tesla and one of the most respected in the Tesla community. Welcome, Dave. You know, I can't believe this is finally happening as I'm a massive fan and I've been following you for over a decade now. Thank you, Dave, for joining me.
Awesome. Yeah, great to see you and meet you over online. But also, I met you in person a few weeks ago So it was great meeting as well.
So Dave is the host of one of the top YouTube channels about Tesla called Dave Lee on Investing with over 230 subscribers. He was a very early investor in Tesla since 2012. And since then, he's made 100x his initial investments. As he developed his conviction in Tesla stock, he started to post his forecasts and analysis first on Reddit, then Twitter. Needless to say, his analysis and predictions about Tesla was spot on, one of the first to really understand the mechanics of the business. Originally a startup founder and developer creating Apple iPhone apps, he's recently back at it again, working on a new language learning app for kids. In the recent months and years, Dave has increasingly been focusing his attention and studying the advancement of artificial intelligence. First, doing deep dives on Tesla's autopilot feature, which is able to assist with driving tasks such as recognizing and responding to traffic, pedestrians, and other obstacles in real time, and can also detect and respond to traffic signals and stop signs. Recently, he's been doing deep research on the new AI tools like GPT-4, Midjourney, and others. Dave, please help me get brighter about the markets that Tesla will be dominating, how quickly they will do this, and how AI is part of all of this.
Lots to unpack there. One quick correction was, I started posting actually on TeslaMotorsClub.com, not Reddit. So yeah, that was back in like 2013, 14, 15 era. Yeah,
you were doing long form explanations of the future of Tesla. People were laughing basically that you're out of your mind, but you were one of the few that got it right and correct. And you're doing it again. So the first question I want to ask you is, most recently, you had an epiphany and you started to think about the various markets that Tesla is going to be addressing. And you started talking about the S curve and how Tesla is about to address these massive markets. So let me show that and get your response to this. So this is what you drew this on a napkin. Somebody made it look a little nicer here, but you showed that this is electric vehicles, full self-driving, a robotaxi, energy, and AI robotics. Can you just explain what this is and what made you think about this?
Yeah. So first off, there's something called basically the S curve. It's a way to show technology adoption. And early on, you often have a slow kind of introduction period. Oftentimes, this is represented by early adopters are hyping the product, but the mass market does not understand it. There's still some pain points. It's still pricey. They go to other existing options already. As the technology gets cheaper and more compelling, and also as the technology presents an all-in-one solution, and this is presented in a book called Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. Basically, the new technology has to be simple and straightforward and easy to use. And once the costs come down where it's just a no-brainer decision, that's when it starts to go up this growth curve. And there's an inflection point. And then it eventually leads to more of a maturity stage over time. And so you have different types of audiences. In the beginning, you have the super early adopters, and then it moves into the mainstream and eventually the laggards. And so this is pretty much, you know, how technology is adopted. And there's some variations. And the most important part is, why do certain technologies actually make it all the way, right, through this growth and maturity stage versus other technologies get stuck and they go into the graveyard? And so there's a lot of kind of philosophies and approaches where, you know, there has to be this amazing product that not just is technologically advanced and impressive and compelling, but needs to be at the right price point, needs to deliver the right value, has to have the right simplicity, and it needs to have the right go-to-market strategy. And so all of these kind of have to come together to make, you know, this curve a reality. So going back to the other curve where we have four S-curves, so this is kind of like four of these technology, you know, adoption curves put together. And so you have the first one, which is electric vehicles or EVs. And so actually, if I want to take a step back on just this S-curve. So this S-curve is interesting because you actually have three, I think, major S-curves within this one EV S-curve. So the first S-curve was basically the premium kind of, you know, $70,000 to $100,000 kind of sedan SUV market that the Model S and Model X were in. And this market, you know, is basically Tesla's, you know, 2012 to 2017, basically curve, where they're able to release this product and get growth in the product in that premium market segment. And then you saw Tesla reach a maturity in that market by, let's say, 2017 or so. Some people thought, oh, this growth is going to go on forever and you're going to have Tesla sell 200, 300,000 Model S's and all this stuff, right? But that's not the reality. Reality is oftentimes these curves, you know, taper off. So the second major technological S-curve for EVs or for Tesla has been the Model 3. Right. And the Model Y. And so that's when you see Tesla timed it, when right when the Model S and X are going into their maturity, that's when they ramp the Model 3 and Model Y right in time so that you see that growth, that big inflection point right when the Model S and X are going into maturity. And there's a few reasons why, you know, Tesla did this. First off, they need to learn a lot during this first S-curve and get all the technologies down. They need to get the battery technologies, the power management, get safety down, get reliability, service center, superchargers, get the whole package. And they need to learn enough where they can make the next big step, where their next evolution of the technology will be significantly cheaper and better. If they don't learn enough, then they're not going to make the next product cheap enough and better and good enough. And so that's why you need that kind of, you need to wait out that first curve, wait till it gets to that, you know, slowing maturity in a sense before you release this next thing. And the next thing has to be really, you really have to knock it out of the park. Much cheaper, has to be better, everything. That's what Tesla did with the Model 3 and Model Y. It was their second big kind of S-curve or technology product adoption they went through. And so you saw in late 2017, Tesla go through the Model 3 ramp, and then later on, a couple of years later, the Model Y ramp. And we're kind of in that phase right now. Tesla is basically at almost like a 200,000 or 2 million production run rate around. Some people think that, oh, this is going to go on forever. Tesla's going to sell 5 or 10 million, you know, Model 3s or something, or Model Ys. And that's not going to happen, right? Most likely. And what's going to happen most likely is you already see the tapering off of this second major S-curve happening right now, right? How many more, you know, 50,000, 60,000, you know, a dollar cars can Tesla sell? There's a market saturation point. And so you've already got this kind of maturing of the second major S-curve with EVs, with the Model 3 and Model Y. So as they mature, right, and we're going through that, we're going to see, you know, the tapering off of, in terms of the saturation of the market. Now Tesla is going to release their third kind of major technological S-curve adoption, which is this Gen 3 car, they call it, or the $25,000, maybe $30,000 car. So this car, now they have to take all of their learnings in their second, you know, stage with the Model 3 and Model Y, and they have to apply it all to this next generation car by reducing costs substantially, manufacturing footprint, efficiencies, all this stuff to make a much better car for the for a cheaper price, in a sense, to grow their market. And that's the next kind of evolution or stage of Tesla that Tesla's in, is in this third kind of S-curve. And this third S-curve is the biggest, in a sense, because the market is the biggest. Because as you bring down the price of the car, you enlarge your total addressable market. And so when you think that, hey, maybe the Model 3 and Model Y can sell, you know, 2 million a year or even a little more, then you, when you bring down the price significantly and you bring it down to like 30,000 or something, you're opening up major new markets. And so that's why, you know, this third generation car could reach over 10 million people, maybe 10 to 15 million, who knows what the exact number is. And there can be very different variations of this third generation car too. It could be a sedan, it could be a small SUV, it could be different, you know, form factors, et cetera. Different geographies can have different variations as well. So it could be actually quite a large platform. But this is the platform, this next generation platform, to basically take Tesla to overtake Toyota and, you know, others, to become the dominant automaker in the world in terms of, you know, numbers and production. So that's the EV market in a nutshell. And right now we're in this, in the overall bigger picture of the EV market. I mean, you've got like 80 million cars sold every year around the world, but then, you know, Tesla's, you know, can sell maybe 2 million plus or minus, you know, amount, but that's just a fraction. And as we enter this third generation, we see the growth in the overall EV market, right? So that's the first S curve, is we're in this hyper growth stage right now. A lot of companies, they get stuck in just one market because it's really hard to find the next big thing, because there are a limited number of big markets, like $1 trillion markets in the world. You know, you don't have like $50 trillion markets in the world. They're a very limited number. And with that, it's hard for a company oftentimes to find the next big thing, because it's a crowded space. There's lots of competition. Everyone's trying to go into ancillary markets next to them. And that's where you get kind of the death spiral of a lot of companies. They get into this bureaucratic kind of maintaining management style, trying to hit these metrics, and their products aren't improving that much. They're not taking big risks. They're not going into new areas. And that's where Tesla is unique in a way, where Tesla's got the next big market. And their next big market is the full self-driving market, which is the autonomous transport market. And this market is bigger than the EV market, because the way EVs, or just vehicles in general, are sold, is they're sold as kind of these cheap hardware products, where you sell them for, you know, bare bones costs, right? Low margins. And most of the value in the car is actually accrued after, meaning a person is driving the car and it's being used for 10, 15, 20 years. And there's a lot of value. And one example is, if someone was to say, I will drive you full-time as a chauffeur everywhere you want to go for the next 10 years, right? That's that value that person can charge or give you is a lot more than the hardware of the car itself. And that's an example of why the overall transportation market is bigger than just the vehicle hardware market. It's because there's so much more. For example, trucking. A truck costs money, but the trucker, right, driving the car costs a lot more. And that's why transportation and logistics is such a bigger, a much bigger field than the hardware itself. And that's why when you go to that second S curve of the of FSD, it's a larger market than EVs. It's more lucrative, and it's much more software based, where it's not necessarily manufacturing, you know, with tons of, you know, factories and such. It's mostly hardware. It's going to be mostly AI and data. And so that's Tesla's approach. This FSD market, it's interesting. One of the questions is, will it be a winner takes most market, like many software markets are, or will there be many players, right, that kind of offer similar capabilities? I kind of lean in the on the side of, I think it will be a winner takes most market. I think people underestimate the complexity of the task, but also the implications, meaning one small mistake, a person dies, you know, with full self-driving. And I think you really want the best software out there. I think so far Tesla's in the lead. They got the right approach. They got the most data. They're building, you know, world-class AI team, infrastructure, compute power. They have all the right pieces. And so the problem with FSD to this point is the nature of the problem is a difficult one to crack because it's a safety and a life and death related problem. Meaning if you're not at a certain point of reliability, then you endanger lives. And so you can't just release it. You can't just, you know, haphazardly. For example, GPT, you know, 3.5 or 3.0 or even 4.0, it's like you just release it in a sense, as long as you kind of have all these disclaimers that this will hallucinate and give false facts and all this stuff, like user beware, basically. And Tesla can't do that with FSD. I mean, they try in a sense where they say you have to oversee and, you know, you're responsible for everything, but it's a much more high stakes endeavor, which is, you know, full self-driving. That's why, you know, there's two sides to this. One side is because it's so high stakes and such a dangerous endeavor, it could mean that there will be less players who are serious, meaning they're more risk averse and they're too cautious. And so it could favor the people or the companies like Tesla who go fast and forward with their plans. On the other hand, because of the nature of this super high risk kind of or field of full self-driving, it could mean that progress could be a bit slower than people anticipate or would like it to be, where you don't have as much field. Like, for example, ChatGPT can be released to tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people in a matter of months, but FSD has to have this much slower rollout, right? And it takes a lot longer to really get to this place where it's safe. And so there's pros and cons to this FSD dilemma, the problem area. But nevertheless, I think the things we have right now are, it's a huge market, much bigger than the vehicle hardware market. Tesla is in the lead. It's mostly a software AI data problem. Tesla has the right approach thus far. It's taking slightly longer than the company and Elon has anticipated or has led on. And there's big question marks on exactly when will this, you know, so-called release date of robotaxi and all this stuff happen. And so those are question marks. But if you take off the timeline and you just look at the potential of the market, there is going to be an S curve. There's going to be adoption that will start will grow. And looks like Tesla is in a great place, a very high margin, lucrative market. And that's what I think, if you just look at EVs and FSD, that in and of itself really, I think, puts Tesla in a unique position where they're still in the kind of, you know, launching of their big product, which is the third gen EV. This is the product that will define the first, you know, S curve. They still haven't even done that. And yet they're going all in on the second big S curve market, which is bigger, right, than EVs, which is FSD. And just those two S curves, I think, in and of themselves are unique. They're huge multi-trillion dollar markets. I think Tesla, if they execute well, they'll be fine. And yeah, it's just, yeah, and a lot of these markets also have high barriers to entry. It's not easy to start a new car company. It's not easy to get millions of cars with data and hardware suites and to create full self-driving fleets and stuff. And so it's not like a simple software project. These are complex hardware plus software problems that require a lot of capital and, you know, expertise. And so the high barriers of entry are also positive in terms of the potential that Tesla has in terms of being able to keep their lead, right, in these two markets.
What I find interesting is that this graph is actually misleading because it makes it look like that EVs and FSD is so small when actually they're multi-trillion dollar markets. It's just because these other markets are so giant, so big, that it kind of dwarfs this, but if even if you, like you said, don't do these things and just focus on this. What I also love, thank you for your description of how it evolved through the different categories of segments of electric vehicles. But now Tesla is expanding into the broader segment of transportation and transportation as a service. So they're getting into Tesla Semi. And if you actually daisy chain these Tesla Semis, you can actually replicate the cost of a train. And that this is where we're headed towards, is basically conquer electric vehicles, which is massive, then get into transportation, but then even just transportation as a service, which is robotaxi, it's massive. So you've given us a good background of kind of the factories, the manufacturing capabilities, but now they're headed to software. And then quickly, can you kind of explain, some people are saying, why did you have energy after FSD? Some people believe that energy can actually happen sooner. It's easier. They've already proven it in multiple utilities across the world. The creating these mega packs is much simpler. They've proven it with Lathrop, that they can just replicate these factories now, versus FSD, while they've made huge improvements and huge progress for us who are testing robotaxi, we can actually see it happening in front of our eyes. But people think that it's going to be, 5 years or even decades away. What's your comment of which one will come sooner?
Yeah, so a few comments on Tesla Energy. So first off, Tesla Energy by nature is a much bigger market, just because the energy markets are bigger than transportation and hardware or vehicles, et cetera. Energy markets are huge. I mean, the world runs on energy. Without energy, everything, the economy crashes. We don't have civilization as we know it. Energy is one of those like key fundamental drivers of economy and progress. And so what Tesla's trying to do with transitioning the world to renewable energy is huge. It's massive. And there's different ways to look at this. I think one way is you could say, just transition the world to solar, to batteries, renewable energy sources. And I think that's one way Tesla will focus and will do it. I mean, that's part of the master plan, part three. I think there are some possibilities later on when, as Tesla gains more and more market share in the energy markets, and more profitability, what are they going to do with all that money? And I think they're going to reinvest into R&D, and they're going to reinvest into the best battery technology, the best energy generation technologies. And I think there could be a case to be made that in the, let's say, 2030 to 2040 timeframe, that if Tesla has, let's say they are investing billions of dollars into new technologies, that where would the next kind of breakthrough in technology, in energy technology, come from, right? On the generation or the storage side. And it's likely going to be Tesla if, they're executing well. And if that's the case, then you could see kind of this snowball effect where Tesla is able to get more and more of that energy market, not just because of traditional products and the way we think of it, but by introducing truly innovative, truly revolutionary products that other people just can't copy. It's just, they're so far ahead. That's the kind of scenario where it's just a snowball runaway case, right? Where Tesla becomes the dominant energy player in the world. And I could see it, nothing is 100% guaranteed, but that to me is a strong possibility if Tesla executes on the right pathway. So what is that pathway, right, to that point? To me, it's you're needing to build your energy business and your energy aspirations off of matching where the demand is in the market. So the problem right now with the markets is that a few things. One is with energy generation and storage, demand is at a certain point, and Tesla's meeting that demand with their products. At different points, and Tesla will grow with that. As the price of, let's say, storage goes down, then the demand will increase. And this is kind of what's going to happen over the next, few decades. As the energy, sustainable energy prices go down, everything's going to shift over to sustainable energy. Now, there's a few things about this. First, it takes time for the prices to come down significantly enough for the demand to, you know, to continue to increase. Second, this is a hardware business, meaning it's a tough thing. It takes time to bring down costs. It's not like a software thing where overnight you're just, you know, slashing 50% costs off of this or that. Another thing is this is a very highly bureaucratic field where in order to secure long contract, big contracts, you have to have sometimes months, sometimes years of negotiation, getting the right deals, lots of contracts, lots of lawyers, et cetera. This is not a simple sales process. Whenever you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars of big projects with governments and big, you know, institutions, you're talking about huge red tape. And so that is something like sometimes you can't scale as fast as you'd like because it's not a technology problem by itself. It's also a contract sales process. A good example is with SpaceX is, if you think of SpaceX as purely a technology company, you miss the bigger picture, which is a lot of SpaceX's kind of revenue and budget is determined off of sales. And their sales, a lot of it is determined by kind of a bureaucratic sales process where they have to get into governments and large companies and sometimes do months, enough years of negotiating and winning over. That's why actually you have Gwynne Shotwell as the COO or kind of this the president or the person who is heading the sales because it's such an important part. And so in a similar way, it's like when you turn over to Tesla Energy, if it wasn't bureaucratic, if it wasn't, you know, slow moving, all this stuff, then theoretically it can go as fast as you could. But this stuff takes time. Tesla will grow fast. It's just that they're starting from a small point, you know, and that they're growing and there's such a big market. It's going to take some time. I don't think that that means by any means that it's not an exciting field. I think Tesla is putting more and more emphasis. I think the next couple of years is interesting because as the Model 3, Model Y platform kind of reaches more of this maturity in demand, then you've got extra batteries that Tesla has and this from the supply chain that they can now prioritize Tesla Energy, Megapacks, et cetera, before they start rolling out their third generation. So it could be definitely an interesting time of high growth. But the bigger picture is for Tesla to, you know, really accrue trillions of dollars of value hypothetically from the energy markets. It's a long-term thing. They need to sell a boatload of energy and they need, you know, a long process to bring down prices and increase, you know, supply.
What's your comment when you heard Tesla, Elon say that it's pretty well infinity, the market could be infinity for energy. I think you touched on it earlier, which is if you're able to reduce the prices, there's going to be higher demand because energy is something that everybody needs and wants. And then once they get to energy generation from solar farms or other ways to harness that, then it's like free. The actual cost is free. And then the only cost would be the batteries to store it. Then it just changes the game, right? So what is your thinking about how big of a market this could actually become?
I have some hesitancy in the sense that, you know, back in the day, people thought solar was going to be this huge kind of, I mean, it is a huge field, but like solar companies and all this stuff were the best investments. And all there's something about, for example, like how much you can bring down the cost for every, let's say, doubling of production, right? You have Wright's Law. And certain things like really benefit from Wright's Law. Certain things are a bit slower to go with Wright's Law. And then another thing is certain things you have technological advantages. Like you have some really fundamental things about how you make your so-called solar panels that no one else can copy, et cetera. We have to ask the question, why hasn't Tesla been very successful at making solar panels? Like why aren't there just this light and head and shoulders above everyone else's, right? Sure, they have their solar roof, but even that is not like, it's still a product in its, you know, young infancy stages. So there's a lot of thing where not everything that Tesla touches turns into gold. Some things are just inherently take a long time. They're much slower. They don't benefit as much from Wright's law as others. And some other places, they move faster, right? And I think the area of software is moving the fastest with AI, with FSD, eventually with robotics will move a lot faster. All of this stuff there's not just Tesla, it's the whole ecosystem is moving fast, right? There's thousands of tens of thousands of companies providing the tools and everything to make these industries move fast. But yeah, energy is a big market. And that's why I put it as actually the third, because for a few reasons. One is I think this is more of, you know, for it to really accrue the potential, it's going to be, we're talking about some time out. We're talking, you know, it's a 2030, 2040 story in terms of the potential of trillions of dollars of market cap value, right? And the second thing is, yeah, this is a bigger market than I think transportation. That's why I put it out on the third S curve. And part of the third S curve does assume some possibility for some energy breakthroughs in Tesla's technology, for some real innovation and some crazy competitive advantages that that only Tesla can accrue, that they can really take advantage of the huge energy market. So there's still a lot of execution left for this third S curve. But it's interesting.
Okay. I mean, it's funny because we should spend a whole day on just energy, but let's go talking about bots and then afterwards general AI. But robotics, bots, I mean, you know, it's yet another statement that Elon has said, right? He said that energy is infinity market, but bots is, he couldn't even explain it, right? The bot would there would be no definition of an economy at that point. And he, in the last earnings investors day, he said that he envisions at least 8 billion bots, one-to-one to humans. And if the bots can do everything, product prices, manufacturing would plummet and anything could be made for so much cheaper. And so people were just, you know, for a year ago, people are thinking this is something that's, you know, way down the line, decades away, but now we're seeing the quick progress that they're making. What's your kind of evaluation of their bot progress and how important this is a business and how big of this market is?
Yeah. So this fourth S curve is bigger than, EVs, but
you
vehicles.
You combined AI plus bots, and I know why you did it, but I kind of, you know, there's bots which needs AI. That's my point. Where we're going to get to in the next half of this call is how AI affects all of this, not just this, but this AI bit is general AI, and that is like the mother load, probably even equivalent to bots and even bigger. Whoever can come up with that, and we could talk about how that is scary, because you don't want one company to own it. But let's talk bots. And then, you know what I mean? Like you really could have had a general AI, which is the fifth curve, right?
Well, general AI, or let's say AGI type of thing, you kind of need a product, you know, in some ways. So, I mean, maybe AGI can be a product of itself, like intelligence on tap, where some people would call it. But for Tesla, they've announced and they've actually are showing their intent, which is they're going to be putting the most advanced AI and in a way AGI into a humanoid robot form that can do tasks, both physical and I think mental, as good as humans in many ways. So with the AI robotics field, you know, it's vehicles, transportation, energy are huge, you know, multi-trillion dollar markets. They're some of the biggest markets in the world, but the biggest market in the world probably is labor. You know, it's not just physical labor, but it's like cognitive, you know, I mean, you could say that it's a different type of labor, you know, there's blue collar work, white collar work, et cetera, but it's human productivity in a sense is the largest market. And I mean, it is the overall market, right? That's it's like the whole thing. And so when you talk about putting potential, let's say artificial general intelligence into a humanoid robot and making that robot do physical and cognitive things as good as humans, if not better, you're talking about a potential product that is kind of like the end of all products, meaning why do you need any other product if you have this? You know, this product will be able to make other products for you, you know, do everything else. So it's almost like the end of products, the end of whatever economy, the end of, you have, and this is the, another question is like the issue of scarcity, right? The economy is always run on scarcity on, and you have limited number of limited materials, limited number of people hours of work, et cetera, and demand. But once you have these affordable, let's say humanoid robots that can work 24/7 and you could scale them, there's no limitation on pregnancy, fertility, raising a kid for 18 years, et cetera. You just have the bot right away. You're basically redefining, reinventing what value in the economy means, because you've got these potential, the millions of humanoid robots that can do, you know, theoretically almost unlimited amount of work to create value, right? They could grow food, they could mine for minerals, they could service, you know, humans, they could explore, they could do many different things potentially, you know, over the long term. So yeah, there's no doubt that the AI robotics market or AI robot market is the largest perhaps market of them all. There's some challenges though that Tesla has in this market. And there are some advantages they have. So the advantages, you know, largely lie on two things. One is the hardware, where they're able to make actuators, power electronics. They've got the, you know, FSD hardware 4 working in, let's say, the humanoid robot prototypes right now. All of that is huge advantages, right? The second thing is they've got their whole vision AI infrastructure. They've got, you know, a huge amount of team, compute resources, data, et cetera, to fill out the brains of this computer. And so they are, I think, by far, you know, in the leadership position in terms of AI robotics. It's almost their game to lose in a sense. The challenging part with Tesla though, is there are others in AI, and AI, the overall field is advancing much faster and quicker and in new directions than almost anyone would have imagined 5 years ago, let's say. And that poses some challenges. Like for example, with OpenAI, they released GPT-4 just 2 days ago. And in GPT-4, they're calling it a multimodal model, which basically they're able to not just look at text, but they're able to look at images. And so they're able to look at an image and not just point out the objects, but actually understand the reasoning inside the different objects. And this was pointed out in Andrei Karpathy's blog post a decade ago, where he was saying one of the most challenging parts of AI that AI is going to do eventually, that was kind of his aspiration, is to be able to understand super complex and nuanced situations and images in a sense where only humans like could understand. And that's what GPT-4 is going into now. They're saying we're not just a text model, we're now a vision and understanding reasoning model. Why is this important? It's because you're having the convergence of these large language models. They're not just for text anymore, but now they're going into the realm of vision. And it's not just pictures, but it will be video soon and audio and all this stuff put together, multimedia. And as they get better and better at understanding their vision and surroundings, right, then these large language models are not just language models, they're also physical models where they're able to understand where to go and what to do in different situations. And so you're going to have a competitor or many competitors to Tesla come out where they're going to take these models that are increasingly multimodal models and put them in humanoid robots. And you're going to have them basically, you know, you think that ChatGPT is just chatting with you. No, these models of the future are going to be able to interact with their surroundings and their physical environments because they understand how things work. And so simultaneous to Tesla bot's development, you have a much bigger ecosystem of development happening in AI overall, a much more competitive landscape with large language models. And they've found the product market fit already, which means that you have hundreds of millions of people using it. And they're charging a lot. I mean, APIs are going crazy. The whole software field is being completely turned upside down. And this is happening right now. Mm-hmm. And this stuff, competitors to TeslaBot will be able to take advantage of. They'll be able to take this brain, stick it in, right, humanoid robots of the future and create something quite amazing. So yeah, so where does this put Tesla, right, in the future? Well, it's interesting. They still have a hardware advantage because they're integrated, right, across, you know, actuators, power electronics, you know, all this hardware, et cetera. But that type of stuff, if you have billions of dollars invested, you can have competitors to that, you know? It's not like only Tesla can create a humanoid robot in physical form. That's not the case. Like, it's not like actuators are the most difficult thing in the whole world to build, right? Mm-hmm. It's with the amount of money, and if you get the right talent, you can build a team that creates a world-class humanoid robot, right? Mm-hmm. So where is Tesla's advantage? You're like, oh, well, Tesla has vision AI, but what's going on with all the other work in the world with AI? It's becoming increasingly more multimodal and will become increasingly more vision and video focused. And so you've got this narrowing of a gap. And so it puts Tesla in a, I won't say a bind, but in a way, Tesla will have to, I think, find a way to I won't say just access large language models, but find a way to take a next step up in terms of what they're doing, you know? Is vision enough, right, to focus on with a humanoid robot when you've got, you know, these bigger models that are more capable across more modes and environments that will be used for humanoid robots as well? Yeah, I don't know. And that's the other thing. Yeah. Will, if OpenAI has, I say, the lead in 5-10 years still, and they have their own robot, hypothetically, yeah, you know, will they Tesla use their models? Like, will Tesla have to go to another model? That's the other thing. Like, it's like, will Elon want to be second, like use a second place large language model to, you know, put in its humanoid robot in addition to their, you know, vision models? Like, it doesn't, there's a lot of question marks. And I think the most logical path forward is probably Elon starts his own, you know, large language model effort. It seems like he might be already doing it at Twitter.
Yeah. He announced Truth AI, right? Which is a competitor to OpenAI. And he just recently tweeted that yesterday or 2 days ago, that he was kind of scratching his head because he donated $100 million to OpenAI. Was his name Sam Altman? And the two of them co-founded OpenAI, meant to be a nonprofit, so that you prevent companies like Microsoft, Google, or Facebook to be able to develop the first general AI and monopolize it. It's supposed to be a nonprofit, give it away to as many people as possible. Yet, OpenAI turned into a for-profit, turned into an investment for Microsoft, helping with Microsoft. And now, Elon's a little, like, kind of stymied. Why did he invest or donate $100 million? Now he's got his own initiative. But yeah, what you just said scares me, which is, you know, we just saw just ChatGPT-4 released just yesterday, and you've been playing with it. And what is it? There's some amazing things it can do, right? In 60 seconds, it recoded the game of Pong. It was able to, it helped this one guy create a whole website. He followed its instructions to create a revenue-generating website selling eco-friendly products. It's unbelievable what it can accomplish. And like you said, if it can do vision, recognize objects in images and video, could it then kind of immediately compete with all the efforts that Tesla's been doing with their vision-based AI for robotaxi, recognizing stop signs, knowing what to start and stop? Could this compete with that? Because whoever comes up with robotaxi, it's going to kill all the other car companies. It's like, why would you buy a car if it can't do robotaxi? So it's whoever can come up with it first. So what's your...
Yeah, I think the question isn't really like, will GPT-4 compete with Tesla Vision? The GPT-4 isn't anywhere near, you know, the capability of even... they're not even the same realm as what Tesla Vision is doing right now. But the idea is that these large language models are increasing their scope and becoming increasingly multimodal. So what's going to happen 5 or 10 years from now? What will these, you know, models be able to do? So that's kind of more of it's more of a 5 to 10 year kind of challenge or question. Yeah, I mean, regarding OpenAI, I mean, it's an interesting kind of backdrop to everything because, you know, as you said, it was supposed to be a for-profit. they wanted to kind of democratize, you know, AI, not keep it, you know, just within the hold of, let's say, mostly Google or Facebook at that time. But I think things have changed where Google's kind of a couple steps behind now with OpenAI. Microsoft has taken a big interest. I think it's up to 49% in OpenAI. OpenAI still has kind of a nonprofit foundation that oversees its governance. So they say that, you know, they're still insulated from a so-called sole profit motivator. But in Elon's view, he looks at OpenAI and he says, well, Microsoft basically controls you guys. And that's not what I wanted, and that's not what I like. And so, yeah, I mean, Elon's approach is he could create his own kind of research lab, create, you know, their own large language model, use the compute resources of whether it's Twitter or a separate lab or even Dojo, you know, where Tesla is building, and to kind of, you know, build something that he thinks could be a better model that isn't as closed. So OpenAI's like approach is somewhat controversial, where they're trying to be open in the sense that they're giving open access to their APIs. And I think it's an amazing opportunity because as a developer, you can tap into OpenAI's APIs and get basically the world's best AI
training it.
On tap.
You're training it. Then they can decide to, yeah.
Well, actually, they've changed their term, or they've added terms where actually they say they won't use data you send to them to train their models. So they're actually saying, hey, we're not going to use your data to train our models. And you can also do something called fine tuning, where you add a whole data set of your own to the model, and it creates kind of like this new model in a sense. It's able to do your own tasks, and they don't use your submitted data for their training. So they're allowing kind of a whole use case for millions and millions of developers to access the world's best AI right now, make businesses right now using these AI with the straight API, or to fine tune their model and to build off of that. And so in a way, I give a lot of credit to OpenAI, where without OpenAI, there's no second place in terms of where developers can access the type of AI even close to what OpenAI has given. Like Google doesn't have that, you know, Facebook doesn't have that. Who has that?
So if I'm what I want to ask you is whether or not Tesla has that, because Tesla has Dojo, which is a supercomputer. Yes. You need to have a supercomputer. They also have been using, and the whole one of the big topics of this call with you was, where has AI been used by Tesla in all of its areas? And I made a list of, you know, battery management, manufacturing, insurance, robotaxi, Tesla bot, energy. That's just a small list of where AI is being used. And so do you not believe that Tesla must have some effort that at least maybe they're not near where OpenAI today, ChatGPT-4 is, but they can catch up eventually? Or are they so far behind? They got caught flat-footed and they're focused on robotaxi. But, you know, we've learned recently that you need to have the global, if you can use a machine learning neural net to learn language, apparently that learning on just the language applies to a lot of other fields. It works everywhere. So did Tesla just focus so focused on just vision, or is this something that can be applied everywhere?
Yeah, it's kind of neither. Okay, so to understand the how to assess this, Tesla is taking kind of a niche approach to AI. They're not really doing general AI, meaning AI that could do a million things well, right? That's what these large language models are doing, where you could do math and English, create a story, you know, make a picture, eventually make a picture, make a video, do all sorts of stuff, right? Tesla's AI is very narrow focused on certain tasks at hand. And so, and Tesla, their main focus with AI has been on vision and with driving, right? That's their narrow niche AI. They're not going to be good right now outside of that narrow niche AI of vision and driving, basically.
Yeah, except so, if it's vision, it's the whole point what he made was that this is vision AI, which is recognizing objects. If you can do this And the neural nets of learning this, you can apply that to a robot. So even though a robot's walking around, it will know that that's a Coke can and that's a fridge, and it'll know how to open it by using the same technology and knowledge and language learn, you know, what they learned with the driving. Is that?
Yeah, but again, that's a narrow, it's a narrow niche.
Consider that narrow.
Yeah, okay. In a sense where they haven't yet, you know, they don't have a million objects, you know, going around outside of the roads, right? So their niche is the roads right now. And they're building, right, this vision AI where it can handle physical environments and the physical world to navigate and know how to interact with the physical world, right? But that's still, even, you know, that's still in a sense narrow, in a sense that, can you tell the AI to translate something? No, right? Can you tell the AI to make you some food or well, humanoid, but they have to know what food it is. Is it, there's so much of the brain that that approach leaves off. And so what Tesla can do right now is they could offer perhaps a vision API where they take their vision, you know, AI systems and come up with a way where people can access, where they could send video to Tesla's computers. Tesla will be able to analyze those videos and give a ton of information, like all the objects, how fast all the objects are moving, all the 3D volumetric space where it's been taken, like predict, make predictions, all sorts of stuff. A lot of amazing stuff, but still this is very, very niche compared to what, for example, other large language models can do. So it's not necessarily Tesla's caught flat-footed. They're focused on a completely different problem, right? It's a very niche driving problem, mostly vision problem. But all the while you've had, you know, these crazy, and it's not just, it's not that vision hasn't gone through crazy advancement. There has been, there's thousands and thousands of AI researchers making great advancements with AI, with vision AI, and Tesla is reaping those benefits too, right? Tesla isn't isolated. They're part of this ecosystem, and the vision AI community has helped tremendously. But outside of that, there's even a larger community outside of vision AI, which is, you know, moving toward general AI that can do a million things, right, that humans can do. So that's the backdrop, and it's going to be interesting, you know, what Elon will do, what Tesla will do. I don't even think, to be honest, like Tesla needs to go into general artificial intelligence, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Just with FSD, it's going to be a huge market where it's going to take a very, very long time before a large language model could be used to be used effectively in driving. And there's a few reasons. First off, there's a lot of like timing issues where you need super fast latency, short latency where every millisecond counts when you're driving, and you have to build models for that. Like everything has to be tailored toward that, right? Because it's a safety issue. And so there's hundreds and hundreds of factors like that, that Tesla has built for that these other models don't have. And so it's going to be a very, very long time before these other models, let's say, could drive even close to what Tesla can do. And it's not even in the near future, right? And so in that sense, Tesla has, you know, a huge market just with full self-driving. The question though becomes with AI robotics, with Tesla Bot. But here's the other thing. The biggest problem with Tesla Bot in the near future is not going to be whether or not how it converses with people and all that stuff and cracks jokes. The biggest challenge for Tesla Bot is, can it do useful physical stuff, right? Can it build stuff? Can it move stuff? Can it, like, you know, all that stuff is the most challenging. Again, that's more of this physical vision AI and, you know, learning how to manipulate objects and interact with the physical world. And so Tesla will focus on that, and they should focus on that, because that's what's going to make or break their humanoid robot. But they're coming at it from this angle. It's more vision and physical angle, where these other models are coming at it more from this internet data kind of language thing. And everything's going to eventually collide, and everything's probably going to be one model in the future, you know? And that's the question though, is if you project it out 10 or 15 years later, what's happening, right? And there's a lot of question marks then.
It's good to hear then that Elon announced a couple of weeks ago that he's going to do Truth AI for Twitter, positioning it as the truth. You know, he pulled Twitter's API that was feeding OpenAI. He found out that they were doing it for free, right? He pulled that off, and now he wants to do his own. So I'm really hoping that this isn't just for Twitter. This is going to be their effort to try to have a general AI approach, very similar to what OpenAI is doing right now. Is that what you think? Or is it, again, very narrow niche that there's going to do with Truth AI?
Yeah, no, Elon for sure has, you know, his sights on a competitor to OpenAI's GPT. Yeah. And he's recruiting, it appears he's recruiting, you know, some of the top researchers to make that happen. Seems like it's happening at Twitter. We'll see, you know, I mean, there's a good chance, like if you throw a lot of money and you throw a lot of, you get the best researchers, right, in the world, and they need the data and they need the compute as well. But if you have those pieces, you have a very good chance. The problem is OpenAI, man, they're just like, they're such a fast organization. They're such a lean organization and they're so capable of what they're doing. So the question is like, yeah, who has a chance to catch up? Because they've already
might not be able to.
Yeah, they've had GPT-4 done basically, the base model four done 6 months ago. So the past six months, they were working on something just called alignment, which means alignment is trying to make their model not be misused by people. That's basically all they've done for the past 6 months, meaning GPT-4 was done 6 months ago, the model itself. And so they're working on basically GPT-5, right? And so it's like, who has even a model good enough as GPT-3
to ever catch up? That's my what I'm concerned about is that GPT-4 was massive step change improvement, massive to GPT-3, and it's happened so quickly. And you, it's like, it's just crazy, right? I mean, you've been playing with it in just the last day or two. This is beyond what people can even imagine in their heads. And I'll show some information, but people already understand that it can get 90% on the LSAT and the bar exam and all these exams that GPT-3 could not even, you know, do as well. But it's beyond that. It's like this understanding and you can actually understand the nuances. Like I said earlier that, there's one guy created a website, started selling products, had the GPT-4 tell him how to create the logo, what the name of the company should be, how to market it, what products, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
So can it ever catch up when we were talking about earlier about exponential growth? And, you know how it is, it could take years to get to some point, but then it'll take months. And then eventually it could be like an hour and then it'll accomplish something you thought was impossible.
Yeah. I mean, I still think there are some major limitations to the current large language models out there, like GPT-4. I mean, I find the limitations because every day I'm pushing it to the limits. I'm really trying to figure out like what it can do well and not well. And for example, I was doing a game this afternoon with my son. Watching, I was like, can you make a clone? I won't say a clone, but make me a game that's similar to Angry Birds, but easier. Yeah. And it can be coded within like, let's say 200 lines of code or less. And I was doing this, but it was like having a hard time. It's still not there, you know? I mean, and that's the thing, GPT-5 still won't be there. It'll be much better at so many things. And it'll be super useful across a lot of things, but there will be these cases that are super challenging that are still kind of challenging. Like another example is I just made a 15 chapter book, a kid's book yesterday. And I'm having my kids and my wife read it today. And we're rating each chapter on how good each chapter is. And it still has it's amazing in terms of what it could do. It's much better than GPT-3 or 3.5, but there's still some limitations where it's like, it's great, but it's kind of repeating the same kind of formula a little bit with each chapter. You can kind of pick it up. It's still like better than probably what most humans can write, but there's still like, there's a lot of areas where AI has major, major limitations. And I think what we're going to see is with GPT-5 and GPT-6, we're going to see there's still going to be that area, but it's going to be overshadowed by all the good things and amazing things it can do. But that's the area, I think, of opportunity where there's a lot of super valuable things that AI is almost able to do, but it's still so far from doing it. It's just like not there yet. That's the opportunities that I think are available for entrepreneurs and people to basically intersect and say, hey, how can we bring AI and what it's lacking, create stuff of super high value and build companies This is kind of, you know, I think the next 5 to 10 year opportunity.
So let's get back to Tesla, because I had assumed that in order to do this, you need large language model, you need a tremendous amount of data, but you need a supercomputer to be able to do this. And that's what Tesla's been perfecting, neural network, which is not a program software, but and it's kind of like this, you can explain it better to me, but a neural net is something that teaches itself how to learn. And that's the thing. But if you feed it with a supercomputer plus massive data, it will then learn these things on its own. Don't you need a supercomputer? And isn't Tesla kind of like well positioned to do this? And yet somebody like an OpenAI, how are they doing this? I know that they had all the data, but I didn't realize that they had the supercomputers.
Yeah, these supercomputers you just buy off the shelf from NVIDIA. I mean, basically, right. You know, and they're all over. I mean, it's not a big issue. It's not a limiting factor for anyone. They cost a lot in terms of you have to buy each individual computer, stitch them together into these clusters and manage these clusters. But it's been done. A lot of companies are doing it. The issue why Tesla is investing into Dojo is not that there aren't supercomputers available. It's not that it's hard to do. It's more of an issue of, in the future, the cost of training these neural nets. Hypothetically, what if these neural nets like are 1,000 or 10,000 or 1,000,000 times larger? And what if, you know, it costs, you know, 100 million, 200 million to train right now, but what if it's gonna cost $5 billion, right, in 4 or 5 years to train? And it's like, who wants to spend that money? What if you could have something that's like 5 to 10 times more efficient, right? That could train, bring down your costs radically. Wouldn't it be worth the investment right now to make that happen? But here's the thing. And it's also, if you have that type of technology where you're cutting the cost 5 to 10 times, hypothetically making it more efficient to train these large neural nets and models, then it could be a competitive advantage at some point, right? But it's not necessarily the only competitive advantage you need, because someone can just spend 5 times more and just get the same compute and do the same thing, right?
What about Twitter? Yeah, him buying Twitter, as some people are saying, is because of the massive data of humans talking to humans and being able to learn that information and feeding it into that. Is that something that could actually help Tesla, or is it, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. I lean on the side that I think unless there could be some way to really bring out certain value in Twitter's data that I personally not aware of. I mean, Twitter data is valuable. The problem is it's a subset of the overall data on the internet and just people online in general. And one of the ideas also is as these large language models mature, some people are questioning whether or not like the amount of data, if that's really the most important thing. Sometimes it could be more the quality of data, also how the data is processed. There might be a move to making neural nets more efficient as well. There's a lot of waste and inefficiency in neural nets because we just don't know how exactly they work. We're just throwing billions of parameters out there and just seeing, you know, what's happening. And so it's an interesting field. I mean, Twitter has some value, especially if you could kind of keep it away from others and kind of hold it. But I don't think you need Twitter to have a fantastic language model, because you have like what, trillions of web pages out there and communications and stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of data.
Okay. So I really hope Elon is doing this and he's going to, you know, he's always said that it's not just about the bot, it's about the brains of the bot. And part of that is vision, but the other part is intelligence. And so he is very likely working on this, right? But then why did Karpathy leave Tesla and then join OpenAI if Tesla was doing something like this already in the background?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It's probably Tesla isn't doing anything with large language models seriously. Like they're not working on a GPT-4 competitor, right? And that's pretty obvious. Tesla is working on vision AI, right? It's more of a niche a field compared to a general, right, AI. And with Karpathy, his vision and interest has always been more on kind of the general AI side. He's always seen the potential for, you know, general AGI. He's always had kind of a positive view of it and the value that it could bring. He's always been super fascinated by certain things that he thinks that AI can do eventually, but hasn't been able to do. One example is on his blog, he has this picture of Obama. This is back in 2012 or so. Like, there was a person on a scale, and Obama was in the back of this person tapping his foot, making the scale heavier, and people are all laughing, but AI just can't understand that picture.
Can't understand so funny, what's happening. Right? Yeah.
Karpathy is really fascinated on kind of progress toward this. And if you think about it, if they've been finished with GPT-4 6 months ago, wouldn't they, and if they're really wanting to recruit Karpathy, wouldn't they show Karpathy like GPT-4? Like, if I was OpenAI, you give him access, right? Give him a computer, a login, try out GPT-4, right? And Karpathy is trying this out. And he's like, maybe even feeding images and all this other stuff. And he's like, holy crap, this is crazy, right? Yep. This is, you guys are so close to AGI, or much closer to AGI than anyone, you know, thinks right now. And he's like, where is he going to go? Like, he wants to play a part.
He wants to be part of this.
All of the cool, I want to say cool people, but all the cool things are being done here. And he's like left out. And he's like, oh my gosh, like, you guys are it. And he joins, but Elon's probably pissed because he's like,
no, but Elon is a co-founder of OpenAI. He is also very aware. He should be, I'm assuming, very aware of what's going on. He knows it 6 months, a year before any of us had played with ChatGPT-4. He knows the progress. And so I'm still hopeful that he is a co-founder, right? So I don't know. Do you think that there's a separation between him and OpenAI now? Or possibly he's negotiating a deal, getting OpenAI's information to feed the bot. And there's going to be, like, just like OpenAI made a massive deal with Microsoft, why can't they do a massive deal with Tesla as well?
Yeah, no, maybe Elon has no relations with OpenAI right now. Zero. He cut them off years ago. Like, it was completely separate. There's nothing between Elon and OpenAI right now. The only way that there's going to be collaboration is if Elon, I think, utterly fails with large language models. Even then, I don't know if there's going to be collaboration. Maybe, like, in the future, I don't know. It's too far off. But there's nothing between Elon and OpenAI right now. Zero.
Yeah. Okay. Well, can you make me feel a little bit better? Can we?
I think the whole kind of point to all this, from my point of view, is the future is unknown. You know, the future really is unknown. And as much as, for example, Tesla, I think, has the leading edge with vehicles, especially with their Gen 3 vehicle on the horizon. And I think they have the leading edge with FSD as well, with their data compute, their team. And then in the long run, they're best positioned for energy as well. But that's going to take a lot of execution as well. And it's a long-term thing. In terms of robotics, they're very well positioned hardware side and on the vision side. But on the other brain side, right, there's some hole there. And that hole is big because if it's AGI, for example, if GPT-5 is better and smarter than the average human on, let's say, 90% of cognitive tasks, that's a big deal. And if it can actually improve even quicker over time, let's say GPT-6 and 7, and let's say they get these cycles even shorter, who knows? And you've got the brain, this super, I don't say super intelligent yet, but this artificial intelligence on tap that is becoming increasingly better at tasks that people don't even, that these AI researchers don't even know. Like, for example, they talk about these emergent abilities, right, of these large language models where they're doing stuff, but you don't know how these models are getting the ability to do certain things because they're learning it they're cross-applying, right, their learnings and stuff from other fields. And it's like, it's surprising people, like, no, it's like, what the heck? That's the thing. A lot of these AI researchers don't really know exactly how these neural nets are doing what they're doing. They're just outputting it. They only know the final thing. They don't, there's no like clear path of how it got there. That's the problem, right? That's the nature of these neural nets. And so, yeah, you've got this interesting future ahead where you're gonna have competitors to Tesla Bot. You're gonna have, you know, different models, different AIs inside humanoid robots. They're gonna be super smart. They're gonna have the smartest, you know, models, large language models in the world doing multimodal everything. And Tesla's gonna be in the thick of all this stuff, right, with their AI bots. And it's gonna be the craziest competitive market ever. You know, this is gonna be insane.
Yeah. And I put my money on Elon. I know that he is definitely focused on this. He knows that this is important. So he's obviously started to make moves on this. I'm glad that he made the move on Truth AI. He's been talking about bots and the importance of intelligence in the bots. And like you said, there's a lot of advantages. So I'm going to put my money with Elon. He's going to find a way to really figure this out. I mean, this is, remember his, the joke about Elon is that people forget now that he's actually a developer and software technology was actually his background. And people just don't even, they think that he's a hardware dude at this point. Okay.
I mean, my money's on Tesla in the sense that, you know, I think they have a good runway with EVs, with FSD, energy, et cetera. I think the things like, and with robotics, they're in a good position, but I think things change too, you know? The competitive landscape changes, technology changes, execution standards change over time. Tesla is going to be a different company in a year and 2 years from now. And I think we need to reevaluate. We need to say, hey, with an open mind, where does Tesla stand, you know? And we need to do that regularly. It's not like this thing we can decide right now what Tesla's going to be in 5 years, because Tesla's going to be different than what we all think, you know, in 5 years. And it could be, they could be far ahead, you know, in a far better, more competitive position than we think. Or it could be different too, right? There could be some more challenges. Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns, definitely.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dave. This was exciting. You blew my mind a few times. Everybody, you already know Dave. He's got a YouTube channel, Dave Lee Investing. He's got a Twitter handle, HeyDave7. If you learned something new and you thought you got brighter, please send me a like and subscribe and write in the comments. Let us know what you're thinking, what any kind of new information that you might have to share with us in the group here. Thank you again, Dave. This is a thrill for me to finally have a chance to talk to you.
Great. Yeah, definitely fun chatting, and yeah, wish you the best.